Okay, here we are. Welcome back, as we say. Not a complete answer. Okay, well, we'll start. We'll learn something nice today. So today, what we're going to look at is actually we're going to finish Parshas Devarim. I remember last time I said we would do it then. So I know we didn't do every pasuk, and that's because Chumash Devarim is that way. It's quite a wordy Chumash of repetition. But we've gone through the topics. And as we saw in this Parsha, the first Parsha of the Chumash, what we have is Moshe Rabbeinu beginning his long speech, and he describes that they left Mitzrayim, and then because when they left Egypt, it was such a big nation, and he had to appoint judges, and he goes into that. And then, of course, he goes into some of the stories of what happened, how they were afraid, how Hashem provided such miracles for them with the man, how they weren't acknowledging their miracles. Unfortunately, how when they wanted to enter, they were supposed to enter the land of Israel, then we had the big sin, as we know, with the Chet HaMeraglim, and he goes into detail about that, about the spies, and how afraid they were to enter the land, even though they were reassured. And then he goes, moves on, and he does express a lot of pain that because of the Jewish people, he's not even going to be able to enter the land, even though the people he's speaking to now are the ones who are going to enter the land, but he has to remain behind. And then he goes on, and he, at the end of the parasha, he goes into a lot of detail about the wars that they had actually just experienced. And this part, if you think about it, this generation did experience, because these are the wars that they just fought with Sichon, with Og, you know, the part which is just across of the Jordan, which is now Jordan, the part that those 2.5 tribes took, inherited, so to speak, outside of the land of Israel. And we know those wars, Moshe Rabbeinu led the Jewish people, and there was tremendous, tremendous miracles. Why does Moshe repeat all the details? Because one of the big things, he wants to give the nation now that's going to be crossing the Jordan and entering the land of Israel tremendous confidence that they will be able to fight their enemy, vanquish, get rid of the enemy, take over the land, and live peacefully. And they shouldn't be afraid of facing these enemies, which have reputations as the strongest nations in the world at the time. So here he's reassuring them by, it's not just words, but by having them relive the experience that they just had now with the giants of Sichon and Og, which were not just ordinary people, but giants. And nevertheless, miraculously, they were able to fight them. Now, today, what we are going to do in depth is something that I found very beautiful. It's a little bit, it's, if you want to say, a bit of a stretch, but it's not a real stretch. What it is we're going to look at what's called, the Sefer is called Ein Yaakov, based on a Mishnah. Ein Yaakov is really the Gemara, but what it is the stories, or what you call the Agadata of the Gemara. The Agadata means the stories, the Medrashim, the real applications that were extracted from the Gemara and put into its own volumes. And we are going to see, I think it's so beautiful and very, actually very practical, both in our attitude and even like to, you know, be able to apply to do, a part which is from the Mishnayos of Brachos. It's the first set of Mishnah, is the Mishnah of Brachos, which talks about all kinds of brachos that we have to make. And we will see a specific type of bracha which is connected to what, and brings the story of our parsha, of how Moshe Rabbeinu was able to win and fight Oik, the giant, and what we have to do because of that. And I'll tell you in a second what it is. So if you look at your sheets, what you have in front of you is actually the sheets that begin. This is, the first part is from, sorry, let's see if I can get myself, a Mishnah. You see, it starts the Mishnah. So first we're just going to look at the Mishnah, and then you'll have patience. We'll see where it connects to where we are in the Chumash. So this is a Mishnah in chapter 9 in Brachos. So as we're going to see different types of Brachos. So these are not Brachos on food. These are not brachas of davening. Rather, what type of brachas are these? You can see these are brachas which have to deal with praise and thanksgiving of Hashem. So let's see how he starts. He says, this is called, the chapter is called Haraya. Haraya because the first word is Haraya. What does Haraya mean? One who sees. So he says, Haraya makim shenasu bay nisim liyisrael. One who sees a place where miracles were performed on behalf of the Jewish people, Aymer, what should he do? He should say, Baruch she'asa nisim laviseinu l'makim hazeh. He should say, blessed are you, Hashem, who has performed miracles for our ancestors at this place. Now, this is an interesting thing because he doesn't, look how he says it. It says, Baruch she'asa, right? Now, instead of saying, Baruch atah Hashem, malikeinu, melech ha'ilam. And there's a big question. Is this intentional? In other words, are we meant to make these brachas without Hashem's name? Or, as the Mishnah writes it, or perhaps no. Perhaps the reason the Mishnah doesn't write Hashem's name is because when we're going to be learning it, we're not meant to be saying Hashem's name. This is a bracha that we're meant to use when we see a place that a miracle was done. And in order that we shouldn't make the mistake and say Hashem's name for nothing, that's why the Mishnah writes it in the abbreviated way. And there's different opinions how this works, if you do actually say Hashem's name or you don't say Hashem's name. But one thing we do see, that we're talking first, establishing miracles that Hashem did for us as a nation. And we have to be there and obviously see the miracle experience, I mean not experience, but see the miracle firsthand in the place that they did, and then we make this bracha. So let's just see, I just want to show you something he says like this. He gives a few, and we're going to see more details in the Ein Yaakov, because that's the Gemara. Sure. Okay, so it's on the top part. Yeah, on the top. I know it's confusing, the page. It's a lot. It's the top part. Okay, so then he says like this. Makom she'ne'ekra. It gives a few other brachas here. Okay, so with this one, we'll read quickly. One who sees a place from which idolatry has been uprooted also has a specific bracha that says, blessed, as we say, Baruch she'okar avedas kechavim me'artzeinu. The one who has uprooted idolatry from our land. Again, you can see an interesting theme that we're acknowledging that Hashem has had a hand in everything that happens. We're still on the first page on the top. Blessings recited upon... then we say like this. What about... these? Are, now we have blessings that we all do. This is very fascinating. The Mishnah continues with blessings recited upon witnessing certain events of the natural world. So he says, upon seeing Zikin. What's Zikin? I'll tell you in a second. Then he gives earthquakes, thunder, winds, or lightning. Then there's a specific bracha. Baruch shekaychai ugvurasai malei oilam. I don't know if you know, but if you hear thunder, this is the bracha when you hear thunder. That's where it applies. I don't know, they say lightning, but there's a different bracha that we say for lightning. And he mentions it after. Baruch aise maise bereshis, the one who creates and does the actions of creation. And interestingly, lightning, even though we sometimes hear the thunder, but you know, it's interesting what the halacha is. This is just, this one is applicable, that you're supposed to have both, see the lightning and hear the thunder. So wait till you see both, and then you make both brachas. And we know, interesting, that even though the thunder, the sound travels a little bit slower than the sight does. So sometimes you can see the lightning and not hear the thunder, right, as we know. But you wait, and then you will. So make both brachas together, see them both, make both brachas. But we have an issue. What is Zikin? So Zikin, interesting, in the Gemara it discusses, it says either it's like a shooting star or like a comet or like a meteor or something like that, another natural phenomena. But like I said, the most applicable one that we would all experience would be lightning and thunder, and that has special brachas that we're supposed to make. Okay, sometimes people are not aware.
You say the bracha after the thunder, after you hear it, when you see a rainbow.
Very good. Yes, that's another one. That was in last week's parsha, Parshas Noach, about the rainbow. Yeah, there is a special bracha when you see a rainbow. Yeah, yeah, it's magnificent to see. It's just magnificent. Yeah. Anyways, okay. And then he goes on and he says, "What about permanent natural phenomena?" So he says, "Upon seeing mountains, hills, seas, rivers, or deserts." You say, Baruch Oseh Bereishis. Now, this is also an interesting thing, because let's say somebody lives, because what, let's say, I'll give you an example. He says the word seas and rivers. So in the Gemara, it describes that it has to be a big ocean, not just any sea, any river. It has to be a big one. So the truth is, we live here, and we travel. Let's say if somebody goes down Military Road every day and Campbell Parade and sees the ocean, do you make the bracha every day? No. So the Pacific Ocean is definitely one that you do make a bracha, because on the oceans we make a bracha, but it has to be that you haven't seen it for 30 days. You don't just make it every single day. Why? Because the idea of these brachas is to know, it's like that you're noticing something tremendous, like the tremendous hand of God. Something that you see every day, you don't really have that same excitement. It doesn't give you that awe, so to speak.
So you don't make the bracha every day. It's only after 30 days. But with thunder and lightning, it's different. With thunder and lightning, you don't make it every time it thunders and lightens in the same storm. But let's just say, I know in South Africa it used to be that with sometimes thunder and lightning, then all of a sudden the sun would come out again, I remember. So then let's just say that happens, and then it starts again. Then you make it again, because it's the storm stopped, now it started again. Or if every single day for the whole month it thunders and lightnings, every day you get to make that bracha, because you're experiencing it. It's different. You're actually hearing it and it's experiencing it. Okay, just interesting things. We're going to go a little further. I'm going to show you, as he says, with the Great Sea. Look, he says, Baruch she'asas hayam ha'gadol. And there's a big discussion, what's the Great Sea? So according to some opinions, it's the Mediterranean, because of course that leads to Israel. So of course that's the Great Sea. But all opinions say all of the oceans in the world are called the Great Sea. Okay. Anyways, then we say like this. The Mishnah says, this is also fascinating, discusses blessings recited on happy and sad occasions. So when you have Gishomim, so he says like this, rain, as we talked about before, rain is considered good occasions, as we know. So he says that he puts into the category rain and on good tidings, right? So both of them we say Baruch HaTov V'HaMeitiv. And what about, unfortunately, when you hear bad news? We know the famous bracha, Baruch Dayan HaEmes. That's when somebody passes away. That's generally, but it could also be other terrible decrees or things that might have happened. We would make that bracha. We go to the next page. Let's see if there's anything there that I wanted to... Yeah, okay. All right. That's right, as he says, like an earthquake is something you experienced, so you would... Definitely. But I want to show you something interesting. Then he says like this. What happens if one built a new house? So he says, or bought new clothes. He says, you make a shecheyanu. So now, this is also an interesting thing nowadays. Do we make a shecheyanu every time we go into Kmart and buy a scarf? No. Because it's so not so exciting and it's something common for us. But if somebody, let's say, for example, had a very, very expensive, precious, I don't know, silk, hand, I don't know, custom made, perhaps when they wear it the first time, they should make a shecheyanu on it, because it is something very, very special. So it's something that's different, that like stands out. And then you make the bracha shecheyanu. As he says, also, and we saw now, I mean, it was so beautiful, emotional, to watch a lot of the hostages come back. And you saw the families. I mean, these families, some of them are so far. And the way they were making the bracha, shecheyanu v'kimanu, it was just beyond emotional to watch. Just so special. Okay, then we have an interesting thing. Then we have like this. Look, it's very cute. He says, one should recite the blessing of a true judge, right, Dayan HaEmes, on a calamity that has the potential to be a favorable occurrence. So this is interesting. What does he mean here? So the Gemara, when you look into the Gemara later on, it describes, it says like this. Let's just say that something negative happens. For example, here's an example, there's flooding. So the rain is very hard and there's flooding and all the crops have been flooded. Now, it's terrible for the immediate. But sometimes, believe it or not, the flooding can actually cause, in the long term, something positive. Because as it says, some of the good earth, the good soil can spread. And then in the next set of crops, it'll actually grow better. So there's something good that's going to come out of it. So what's the bracha? So it says, no, you make the Dayan HaEmes, you make the negative, in a sense that you're thanking Hashem, even though it's something negative, because in the immediate, that's what you're feeling. And then the other way around, he says, what happens if something is good and will lead maybe to something bad? So still, you just concentrate on what you're experiencing now. And the example, that's funny example, it says, what happens if somebody finds a lot of money, but there's somebody with them? This is the olden days, how it was. So he says, what's the problem? So it's very nice to find money. I mean, now you have more money to spend. But he says, but you don't know, maybe because the other person might talk and the king might get wind of it. And then not only will he demand this money, but he'll demand even more money from you. So it could lead to something very negative. So he says, don't worry about the negative that it will lead to. In the immediate, thank Hashem in the positive for the good that he has done for you. Okay, just quickly a little drop more, he says. A very fascinating thing, he says. Also about different brachas, he says, blessings should not address the future, right? So this, because he mentions that, so he talks also, he says like this, like when you daven. So he says, to cry out over that which is past is to utter a prayer in vain. So let's say he gives an example. If a wife is pregnant and you say, I want my wife, halavai, that my wife should give birth to a male, that's a prayer in vain. It's already decided, it's finished. So what are you doing? So he says a prayer in vain. Similarly, he says, if you're coming along the road and you heard the sounds of screaming in the city, and I think there is a story, I think with Rabbi Akiva even, he says, anyway, so a person might say, may it be your will that this screaming is not taking place within my house. Well, it's already taking place. So it's a stupid prayer. What should you pray? Rather, that the people in the house should be protected, right? That's what you should pray. Not that it shouldn't be in my house, right? Or it shouldn't be negative screaming, but you can't pray things that are already, it's ridiculous. That's what he says. Okay, so that's just an example of what it says. It's called a prayer in vain. Then he gives a very interesting thing. Again, it's funny, we wouldn't think of it nowadays, but now again, unfortunately, I think we do think of it. Until recently, not, and now, yes, look what he says. One who enters a dangerous city should pray twice, once upon his entry and once upon his departure. Ben Azai says he should pray four times, twice upon his entry and twice upon his departure. Why? Because what he should do is, before he enters, he should pray. And then when he's entered peacefully, he should say, thank you, Hashem, and pray again. And then when he leaves, before he's leaving, he should pray. And then when he gets out safely, he should pray again. I saw recently, I don't know if you saw this, there was a plane that was traveling with a lot of Israelis on it, and they had to make an emergency landing. I think it was in Saudi Arabia. Now, you know that Saudi Arabia doesn't, even though they, you know, they act so nice, but they're not, there's no peace treaty yet with Israel, right? Jews and Israeli airlines and Israelis, never mind Jews, for sure Israelis, do not go to Saudi Arabia. And they were petrified. I read about it just recently, it just happened recently. They were, thank God, everything was okay, they were safe, they took off, they stayed in the air, you know, in the plane, and everything was fine. But I could imagine in such a case, you would make this tefillah. You would really dive into Hashem, to protect before we land, and then after we land, and then when we leave, for sure, before we leave, and after we leave, that we should be safe. Because this is definitely a dangerous place for a Jew, and especially if you have an Israeli passport, as we can see. So nowadays, you could really feel that this could, you know, I wouldn't want to go to a lot of countries nowadays. Okay, so let's see how he says. Then he goes on and he says like this, one more last thing before we go into what will apply to us. A person is obligated to bless Hashem. This is a very hard Mishnah, but it's a Mishnah that's discussed philosophically in many, many ways. Again, it would be beautiful to do its own shir, but he says you're obligated to bless Hashem for the bad, just as he blesses Hashem for the good. Now we know, we do say the bracha, Baruch Dayan HaEmet, right? You know, and we say, so it's a bracha. But here he's saying more, that the feeling and the attitude and the, I don't know how you say it, but the connection to Hashem that you should feel should be the same, whether it's negative or whether it's positive. It's a hard one. It's a very high level, obviously, when somebody can reach that level. The main thrust of what the, you know, the commentaries tell us is the idea being that what we believe is that nothing negative comes from Hashem, nothing bad comes from Hashem, and it's only that we feel it as bad. It is not revealed good, it is unrevealed good, but hidden within it there is something good, and that's why we should be acknowledging and be able to thank Hashem. It's a hard one, and he brings the famous thing that we say every day, that we should love Hashem with both our hearts, as we say, which means with both inclinations, and as we say, b'chol nafshecha, with all your soul, which means even if he takes your life, and of course, b'chol ma'idecha, which means with all your resources, even if he takes all of your money, but b'chol ma'idecha also, it doesn't continue here because we're going to see the Ein Yaakov, but we know it means also whatever measure Hashem measures out to you. Now, if you go to the next page, I want to show you. Now we're going to come to what connects to our Chumash. And here we have a very beautiful idea. This is on the third page. It's a little bigger. It's easier to follow. So as you can see, it's based on the Mishnah that we have just read. So this is what we call Ein Yaakov. So this is the Talmud, the Gemara part, based on the Mishnah. So first he quotes from the Mishnah, and then he's going to elaborate. So he says like this, the Mishnah teaches us that the blessing that a person should recite when he sees a place where a miracle was performed for the Jewish people. So what happens? And he gives examples. So he says, someone who sees a place where miracles were performed, and what's the example that they give? They give where Hashem split the sea, as we know, where we went through Kriyas Yam Suf, there you should say the bracha Baruch Atah Hashem Sha'asa Nisim Laviseinu B'Mokim Hazeh, right? That you've performed miracles. I said Sha'asa Nisim Laviseinu B'Mokim Hazeh, in this place. That's a very beautiful concept that we say. That's a bracha. There's a very interesting question. If you notice, and it brings it in the bottom and the inside there, very interesting. The bracha that we make is Sha'asa Nisim, that Hashem made miracles in the plural. And we're talking about going to a place where one miracle happened. Why do we say it in the plural? So there's a few beautiful ways to understand this. One thing is that we believe very much, and that's why we do commemorate a lot of the miracles, that when Hashem does even a single miracle to a specific group of people at a specific time, it is not bound to those people at that time. What he's doing is he's opening up this like door, if you want to say, this, I don't know what the word is, like a shaft almost, for miracles to be able to come down. And what happens is that this is a continuous, ongoing, miraculous experience. A, whenever we go to that place, and B, the potential is there, and C, something else very beautiful, and this is something so magnificent. That's why, and I think we do it, we don't even realize that we're doing it when we do it. Do you know, now let's say on Hoshana Rabbah, when it was so amazing, and all the hostages were coming out. Of course, I'm not talking about the bittersweet, but the fact is that it was miraculous. They came out and they were alive. I mean, it was unbelievable. But what we know is that Jews everywhere in the world were happy. Now, obviously we're happy because we're Jewish, and we feel for everybody. But it's even deeper than that. When Hashem does such a miracle, it means that there are, it's like a miracle, how do you say it? A miracle weather, a miracle atmosphere that's in the world. And we feel it, we do. There's a miracle energy that takes place in the entire world, and all of us can tap into it at that time. And that's what we have to realize, that at the time when, and we do, that's why we, and when we feel the joy for the people that are actually firsthand experiencing it, we should really be aware, and we should know that we are also tapping into that miraculous energy. It's like a door has opened up, it's like a window, you know, and it's an energy that's coming out. And this is what's happening, and that's why it's in the plural, because it's a literally a window that opens up, that Hashem is letting out like this miraculous energy. So that happens, A, at a time when it's actually happening, but also it is continuous. And that's why every time we go to a place that a miracle was experienced, we can, on some level, tap in to that miraculous energy. And that helps when we're aware, and we acknowledge, and we're grateful for the miracle that took place there. So that's a very beautiful thing, that's a continuous thing. So that's one thing. I'm going to go on, I want to show you something beautiful on the next page, because then he brings nice little stories, as we know. Okay, so he brings other examples. So he says, so let's see the Gemara. See, on the next page, it says the Gemara. From where do we learn this, that we make a blessing over a miracle, right? So he says like this. How do we know? Who was the first one who did it? So he says, Yisrael, remember when Yisrael joined the Jewish people, what did he say? He said, Baruch Hashem, right? He's one of the famous Baruch Hashems. Asher hitzel eschem miyad Mitzrayim, right? Baruch Hashem. Blessed is Hashem who rescued you from the hand of Egypt, right? So he joined the Jewish people, we know, after they left Egypt, right? And he heard all about the miracles that the Jewish people experienced. Moshe Rabbeinu told him. And when Moshe Rabbeinu told him, what came out of Yisrael's mouth was Baruch Hashem, which is a blessing to Hashem, praised Hashem for doing all these miracles and for saving you. Now, this is the example that the Gemara brings to show us that when we go to a place that somebody has experienced a miracle, we should make that bracha. But there's a few interesting questions. A, Yisrael was saying Baruch Hashem for which miracles? For the miracles that Hashem took the Jewish people out of Egypt. Where were they at the point when he was making that bracha? They weren't out of Egypt anymore. They were in the desert, right? He joined them afterwards. So how does that work? So it's fascinating. So it says an interesting thing. One simple way to explain it is, because when the Jewish people left Egypt, they went into the desert, and the desert is just a continuation of those miracles, because it was miraculous that they should be able to exist in the desert. So he was there in the miraculous state. But there's another thing, and this is such a beautiful thing. When Moshe Rabbeinu told Yisrael all the experiences that they had, the 10 plagues, and, you know, everything, and how they left Egypt, and how the cloud was, and the death, everything that happened, it was so real. It was the way Moshe Rabbeinu told it, because Moshe Rabbeinu was also re-experiencing it. It was so real and so powerful that Yisrael almost, it's like, you know, sometimes when you, we can relate to that in a way when we watch like a very well-made movie, you know, and it transports you into that place. That's what was happening to Yisrael. He was literally, by listening to Moshe, almost experiencing the miracles. And therefore, out came the bracha, and it was correct for him to make the bracha. But what's the lesson for us? Because the truth is, when somebody tells you a story about a miracle that they experienced, you don't make that bracha. But what it does tell us is that we ourselves really have to work on trying to put ourselves in that headspace, if we go back somewhere where we did experience a miracle, and feel it again. It's not good enough to just say it with words. We have to re-experience it. It's something very important, and we can, if we acknowledge the hands of Hashem and we're filled with gratitude. So we can transport ourselves back to that miracle state, so to speak, to that state where we were in that negative, and then boom, look how amazing it became. That's what Yisrael shows us. So it's actually quite a powerful thing. That's what it says. It explains beautifully. I just want to see. He says a very, very beautiful thing. On the bottom, all the way on the bottom, he brings the Gera Rebbe. Beautiful, beautiful idea. He says that the Gera Rebbe explains that it became as real to Yisrael as if he had actually seen the place of miracles. He says, as if Moshe had shown Yisrael a picture album. And nowadays we would say a video of you know, a whole Facebook page of depicting the miraculous events. So he says something very beautiful. He says that the truth is that Yisrael, he was able to reach this level of appreciation without actually seeing the place of the miracle. And this is what we have to work on, as we say. And the Manchester Rosh Yeshiva, Yehuda Zev Segel, he says something very beautiful. The very fascinating thing, you know, we have the story of Yosef, right? And how Yosef, unfortunately, was treated so badly by his brothers. But we know that even though there's a lot of negatives in the story, Yosef experienced tremendous miracles throughout his life. We know. Firstly, he was saved from the pit, right? And not only was he saved from the pit initially, but then he was again saved when Potiphar threw him into the dungeon. He was again saved from the pit. Just a side thing, you know, I heard something, but I don't know the story completely. There was one story of one of the hostages. That's another thing on Shabbos. I don't know where he was. There was one hostage that the father went for a bracha to somebody, and he said that he should say every day this story of Yosef, of how Yosef has been saved from the pit. And he did. And his son actually came out alive. And something with the son also was, he saw, the son was shown, this was very, in a way, sad, but in Israel, this was a person who was not religious at all and didn't even know the stories of the Chumash. And those Arabs, whatever they were, the terrorists, showed him a movie they had, I don't know, based on the story of Yosef. And it was actually the first time that he had seen that story. And he had felt, when he saw how Yosef was saved from the pit, he himself felt, if Hashem did it for Yosef, Hashem could do it for me as well. I could also be taken out of the tunnels. So both his father and he, without knowing, both were thinking about that. And both had, and tak, it happened, miraculously it did happen. But over here we bring a very fascinating thing. So we know that Yosef had miracles, but Yosef also had tremendous things that were done terribly to him. What happened after Yaakov passed away? So you know that when Yaakov passed away, they promised Yaakov that they would bury him in Israel. So at that time, Paro gave permission, and Yosef was able to travel, right, we know, back with Yaakov's remains, and they went to bury Yaakov, and then they returned to Egypt, right, we know. When Yosef was on the way back to Egypt, he passed the place of where his brothers had thrown him into the pit, right, and he had been saved. So what did he do? He stood by that pit, and he started to say the bracha, that a bracha of thanks to Hashem for saving him, for making a miracle for him in this place. Now his brothers were watching him. And it says that his brothers, we know that the Chumash tells us, doesn't tell us this behind the scenes part, but the Chumash tells us that the brothers got very frightened after Yaakov passed away, and they came to again to ask him for forgiveness, and they made even up something. They said that Yaakov told them that he shouldn't harm them, right? They were petrified. And the big question is, why were they so scared all of a sudden? He hadn't harmed them till then. But the reason they were scared, it says, is that because when they saw Yosef re-experiencing everything, when he was standing by that pit and thanking Hashem, he wasn't just saying it lip service. He was going through it. He like was literally re-experiencing the whole story. They were petrified that now he would feel that pain again and he would want to do something to them, which they deserved because they had caused them such pain. But we can see from the story how Yosef had relived his experience. He didn't just say the bracha, he literally went back and relived the experience. So it's quite a powerful concept that we can do and we should be doing when something good happens to us, as we say. Okay, so then let's go on. I want to see where we're up to on this page. Okay, so on this page we've read, yeah. So he says, thus we see that even a miracle that occurred in the past to other people warrants a blessing. Okay, that's if you see the place. Let me just see. I'll show you something here. Now, if you go on, this is page 174. Look in the middle of page 174. A beautiful thing. It says like this. The Mishnah says that we recite the blessing on miracles performed for the Jewish people. This implies that we recite the blessing only for miracles that occur to the nation as a whole, but not for miracles that occur to us as an individual. So now that's the question. Do we make a bracha only when it's like, you know, miracles that happen as a nation? Or what happens if we experience personally a miracle? Should we say the bracha? So let's see what he says. So he brings stories. Very, very interesting. So he says, there was a certain man, see it's in the middle of the second paragraph, who was once traveling through a place called Aver Yamina. It has to do with the location. When a lion attacked him, a miracle was performed for him and he was saved from the lion. So he comes to Rava and asks him, what should he do? So Rava says, whenever you come to that place, you should recite the blessing of Baruch Atah Hashem, right? And with Hashem's name, Asha'asa li nes b'makayim hazeh, right? That you made a miracle for me in this place. And that means that we learned from here that even if we experienced a miracle, now this is an interesting question, how exactly you define a miracle. So this would have to be asked, I guess, if somebody has a question, if it's a real miracle or if it's just, I don't know, a good, you know, something like turns out well, that wouldn't be the case. But if it's like an open miracle, I don't know, I guess a bad car crash and somebody was saved. I don't know what could have, you know, we never, as we say, somebody was a real danger and was saved from it. And you see that place again, there is a bracha that should be said. It's quite a exactly right. That's, so you make hagaymel when you're, so in some cases, like if you're saved from if somebody was very sick and then they got healed, yeah, that's also a similar, that's also part of the Gemara, comes afterwards, the whole discussion about when you make that bracha of hagaymel, because it's also one of the Thanksgiving brachas. Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. Yeah, it's an amazing bracha. It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. So I just want to show you the next story, because then he brings another story. Mar, the son of Ravina, was once going through the valley of Aravais. This is interesting. And he thirsted for water. Okay? There's no water. He's very thirsty. And he obviously was a very big tzaddik, because a miracle was performed for him, and a stream of water was created for him, and he drank from it. And yet another time, it says, Mar was traveling through the marketplace at Mechayza. Now, this is something that we would more understand. When a wild camel attacked him, the wall of a nearby house miraculously collapsed for his sake, and he went inside the house and he escaped the camel. So what would he do? Very interesting. Look what it says. What bracha did he make? So he says, performed a miracle for me. And look what it says. In Aravais and with the camel. So he mentioned both miracles. Interesting. Even when he was at the place where he was saved from the camel, he mentioned the miracle of the water. And it says afterwards, look, it says, what happens when he would see the place where he had been thirsty? So what bracha did he make there? If you go to the next page, it says he also made both. He said, on this page, it said there, he says, who performed a miracle for me with a camel and an arava. So it depends where he was. So very interesting. What he would do is, he would always mention all the miracles. But depending on where he was, so he would mention that miracle first. So the miracle that took place where he is, he would mention it first. But once he's mentioning the miracle, he would mention all the miracles he experienced. This is such a fascinating idea. And I want to show you what it says. They bring a beautiful idea on the bottom. Let's just see. Okay, so first of all, obviously that we should always appreciate, if you want to say, the good, not only at the moment, and not only of that moment, but of all the good that has happened to us. I'm going to show you something it says on the next page. So if you go to page 175, look, so firstly, what do we learn from here? That even a miracle performed for us as an individual, you make a bracha. But also, obviously, we say, the miracles performed for the nation, everybody has to make the bracha. But the miracle that's performed for you, so just you make the bracha. Obviously, that makes sense. And obviously, when you are in that place where you've experienced that miracle. Okay, but I want to show you something beautiful. If you look on the bottom, inside C, I'll just skim it. I'll show you, I'll tell you more orally. Very, very beautiful idea. It says like this, that this practice that Mar, the son of Ravina, had, that he would, you know, mention all the miracles, right? Even when he went to one place that only one of the miracles happened. He says, some people say that he did beyond the letter of the law, but some people say, no, this is the right attitude that we're meant to have. So they bring from a person, Reb Chaim Ephraim Zaitchik, and he says that this is a very beautiful thing, that a general perspective that we are meant to have. In life, thank God, we do experience many good things. I'm not going to say we all experience open miracles, but we do experience good things. Like you say, Rona, right? When we were nothing bad stays forever, and good things happen, right? There are good things that happen, especially when we start to reflect back. You know, sometimes when we're in it, we don't see it so much, but afterwards, we can appreciate it more. And also when we see how dots connect, and then we can really see how it really was, every part of it, was meant to lead to something good. So what do we learn from here? Something very, very incredible. That the truth is, not only are we meant to be thankful to Hashem for the good He does to us, but we're actually actively meant to sometimes sit and reflect and literally bring up the good that Hashem has done for us. And they bring such beautiful things. You know, modern psychology has adapted many things that were literally the Chachamim did 500 years ago. You know, now they talk about these gratitude journals and all these different wellness, all these things. I'm going to show you something amazing. Here they bring Rav Avraham Azulai, who was the great-great-grandfather of the Chidah. So he even lived like in the 1600s. But he brings from a person, Rav Avraham Galanti, who lived in the 1500s in Italy. And he says like this, I'll show you something beautiful. He says, it's in the, see, I'll tell you where it is, on page 175, right? On is, yeah, 175, almost on the bottom paragraph. It says like this, they used to write a list briefly describing all the wondrous good that Hashem has done for them. And they would carry that list with them wherever they went. So they didn't just have it in their memory. They would actually write it down. It's so magnificent. They carried it and they read it daily. That's what he says. And the Chassam Sofer says, and this is such a beautiful thing that we should all, you know, you think that nobody will be receptive, but believe it or not, they will. The Chassam Sofer gives a very beautiful instruction. He says that when a person reaches an older age, so he should review all the kindness Hashem did for him throughout his life. But not only should he review it, but he should share it with his children and his grandchildren. That's what it says. He says, so that they too should appreciate what Hashem has done. And he says a beautiful thing. He brings beautiful psukim. These are psukim from Tehillim that David HaMelech tells us. And it's funny, I want to see it in, I wrote it in the Hebrew because they bring it here in the English. But the psukim are so beautiful. The psukim say, it says like this. Yeah, it's in, I think, Ayin Hey. Does it say 75 chapter? It says, Avoy bigvures Hashem aleikim, askir tzitzkoscha levadecha. Right, so he says, I shall come with the mighty deeds of Hashem. I will mention your righteousness. That's what David HaMelech says, right? And then he continues and he says, even until old age, O Hashem, forsake me not, until I proclaim your strength to the generations. David HaMelech says, I have to be alive so that I can be the one to proclaim, in other words, to let everybody know the experiences that I experienced to the future generations, so that they should also be aware of all the miracles and the good things that happened to us. And he says very beautifully, I will speak of your righteousness, and he says, yours alone, which means that at the time they were yours alone, and only I experienced them. But now I have to share them with my children and my grandchildren. So you see something very amazing here, that actually part of this halacha is that we should not just remember when we go to the place. Not only should we be reflecting on the good Hashem does, so we're filled with gratitude, but there is also an instruction for some people, maybe at least partially, to actually write it down, to reread it for ourselves, and then to share it with others. Obviously, I know children don't have patience, grandchildren don't have patience, but they will listen if it's done in small doses, a little bit, and you can share, and it's something so beautiful. And what I find is also sometimes at the moment, they might not look, but afterwards, they are happy. People are happy to hear, and then you want to hear while you still can, to hear all the tremendous things that have happened that we have experienced. It's such a beautiful, beautiful idea. But let's just say, even if you can't share it with your own children, your grandchildren, you can share with others, friends, but also yourself. You can write it down and you can read it yourself. And it gives you that lift when things are not going so amazing, and you remember and you recall and you re-experience a lot of the good that we have, yes, experienced for sure.
Can I just say while I'm sitting here, I was a guinea pig when cortisone was first invented.
Cortisone, oh my gosh.
And I had to go through a weekend of putting those drops in every 2 hours from Friday till Monday. I didn't sleep that weekend. Every 2 hours, these drops were put in. Wow. And it was a miracle.
A miracle.
I didn't have to go to sleep every night with cotton wool and water to open my eyes when I wanted to wake up. Incredible. And many, many years later, we were on holiday, and I recognized that doctor. And I went up to him, and I asked him if he remembered me. He says, of course, why should I forget you? There's no condition like you've had since cortisone was invented. That was a miracle to me.
That was a miracle, that's definitely.
When I found the nurse and told her I'm coming, do you believe in miracles? She says, there's no such thing. Well, when I walked into the rooms on the Monday, she started crying.
Ah, there you go.
I was 17 years old. I remember the year, how young I was.
Wow.
Once upon a time.
It's been amazing.
But that has always remained in my mind.
Yeah. That's
and tough. I was just to wonder, what does it feel like when you wake up in the morning, you can just open your eyes. But when it happened to me, it's remained in my mind to this very day.
Wow.
Now I run to the window. Open the curtain to see if I see.
And she can still see. No, it's just.
That's something else. But just like you saying, how things come to your mind so many years later.
Later.
I'm sure my children
know. No, but so you have to tell them. Rona, that you have to tell them. And you must. Yes. That's beautiful.
Say, well, I've heard it before, so I said, well, I won't tell you again.
It's all
well,
good.
Anyhow,
no, it's good, it's true, but it's incredible, incredible, yeah. So here, then it continues, and the Gemara continues, and the Ein Yaakov brings the Gemara, that continues with the stories, as we said, that the Jewish people collectively had. And they bring certain miracles, the crossing of the sea, as we know, the famous one, when they left Egypt, and the crossing of the sea to go into the land of Israel with Yahshua, and they crossed the Jordan again, and it split. And then it brings the story that we've mentioned in the Chumash, that famous story that's not so famous, so to speak, from the Chumash. We need the Medrash to tell us where the Jewish people were saved from those enemies who were standing on top of the mountain and wanted to throw down these big boulders and kill them, but Hashem made the mountains move, do you remember? And it crushed them. So the pasuk just says, Nachal Arnon, that they when they went through the Nachal Arnon. And they say, what happened to Nachal Arnon? And that's when it discusses the incredible miracle. What's special about this miracle is that when the Jewish people went underneath, as it says, it was like a valley, they had no idea that they were in danger. No idea whatsoever. But not only didn't they know they were in danger, they didn't even know that a miracle happened to them. Until, as the Pesukim tell, as the Medrash and the Gemara describes, there were two people who were Hatzaras, and because they had Hatzaras, they were outside of the camp. They were behind. So what happened was, by the time they started to go through, there was blood running through the waters coming down from the top of the mountains because the people had been crushed. The Jewish people themselves wouldn't have ever known because they had already passed. But it was only because these people were behind and they saw that blood in coming down from the mountain that they realized something had happened. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu told them, the tremendous miracle that they had unawarely just experienced, which is unbelievable. And that's what he describes. So there are miracles that we know about and that we experience, and then there are constant miracles that we don't even know about, thank God, because otherwise we would walk around with terrible anxiety. But Hashem does protect us. And obviously, once we do become aware, we do have to thank Hashem for the miracle, even if we weren't aware while we were experiencing it. And then he goes on, and this is the part that we were getting to, but we did do this last time with the amazing rock. You remember that Moshe Rabbeinu, that Oig, you know, wanted to throw and destroy and kill the whole Jewish people. And it says a fascinating thing. Why did Oig, the giant, even have the confidence to think that he could destroy the Jewish people? They're the children of Hashem. So it says because Oig had something going for him. What was it? Remember, that goes back to our Parshias now, in Chumash Bereishis, because when Lot was captured, what did Oig do? He went and told Avraham, right? So Avraham was able to save Lot. Even though he had terrible intention, he thought Avram would be killed and then he could marry Sarah. But doesn't matter. He did a good thing. He told Avram and Avram saved Lot. So because of that, Oig had this arrogance that he thought, I have something good. Hashem is going to do something for me. And he decided that the Jewish people, they weren't so deserving to enter the land of Israel. Look at them. Who are they anyway? I can destroy them. And fascinatingly, so we say that when we pass the place, or if you see that rock, I don't know where the rock is now, then you should make also the bracha that Hashem saved us from Oig. But there's a fascinating thing that it says. Why wasn't Oig successful? What was the problem? And it's a very fascinating thing, because he wanted to destroy the entire Jewish people. It says that Hashem will never, ever let anybody destroy the entire Jewish people. If he would have had lower expectation, unfortunately, and said, I want to just destroy a part, maybe he would have been successful, maybe, if they weren't worthy of a miracle. But because he had intention to destroy the whole Jewish people, Hashem stepped in immediately, and he wasn't successful at all. And then Moshe, miraculously, as we know, killed Oig. Remember, we discussed that, how he was able to lift the mountain and throw it, and Oig died in a miraculous way. But the reason we're mentioning Oig is, as we said, because this miracle happened, and whenever we see that rock or that place, we have to make that special bracha that Hashem saved us from such a terrible calamity. So we see a fascinating thing here. Again, also a few beautiful lessons that also, when we do something good for somebody, even if it's not with the best intention, it does actually stand in good stead, which is something we can also bank on. But also we have to realize and acknowledge and be focused on all the miracles that we experience now and that previous generations, and realize that the miracles continue, and that the miracles, and it's a fascinating thing, the miracles continue, and that the miracle, when we experience a miracle, it's actually not just for us. And this is something important to remember also. That's why we have to share. Miracles should be shared. You know, some people say, I'm a very private person. Obviously, sometimes not every detail, but it is important because it gives other people the recognition of the greatness of Hashem. So it gives a lift. And not only that, but you're also spreading that energy of the miracle. So it's such an important thing to do. So you make your, but the only way you're going to be able to share it is if you truly experience it the right way. In other words, if you reflect and realize that this is truly a kindness, a miracle from Hashem. And one of the ways of really feeling that is actually by making the bracha. So both things, you have to feel it to make the bracha, but making the bracha helps you feel it as well. Now, not always can we make a bracha, but what we can do is we can write it down, we can reread it, we can reflect, we can think about it, and we can allow ourselves to go back to that good space in our mood, you know, in that lifted space, and feel lifted and elevated and positive, and that's really what Hashem wants. So it's a very fascinating thing, and that's part, as we said, that's why it's called Haroya, this whole chapter, the one who sees, because the idea is that we should transport ourselves back as if we are actually seeing the miracle happening again. That's the idea. It just shouldn't be as if we're just hearing something happened a million years ago, or half-hearted. It should be as if we're actually re-experiencing it. Haraya es hanes. You see, that's what it is. And we can. If the Torah says that, it's possible. So, it's such a beautiful idea. Yeah.